and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Another weekend to the Great Lakes State, all over the world via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can find us on Facebook, follow us on the Twitter as well. And we are being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, lucky-buck.com. And the link is on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And we're getting ready, man. Some warmer weather coming our way, a couple of shows coming our way, and more banquets coming our way as well. We'll talk all about that in the upcoming show. But first, we're going to speak with Todd Grischke, the Assistant Chief of the Fisheries Division for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, the DNR. And we're going to talk a little bit about grayling. Not the town, but the fish. Todd, welcome back. It's been a while since you've been on with us, man. How are you?
Well, doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you guys have been very busy with a study about the grayling fish here in Michigan, the Arctic grayling to be specific. And it's been a long couple of years. You've had some great funding coming your way to do some research prior to just throwing these fish in the water. Like, you know, there's a lot to be done, especially with this species. And tell us what you guys have done over the past couple of years to study this fish.
Yeah, we'll do. And it has been a fantastic effort because of the partnership and interest from all across the state. We started with a foundational partnership back in 2016 with the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians. So it was a foundational partnership between them and the Department of Natural Resources. And what grew out of there, or that effort, is now 45 organizations strong. And it became such a big splash, big effort, big interest. We realized right away we need to break this down into really four main topics. You mentioned one of them, which is research. That's key, we believe, to understanding not just the fish, but the environment, the stream environment where they're going to be. Because, as you're well aware, what we have today for fisheries and types of fish species is much different than existed back in the late 1800s when these fish were prevalent in our water. So we need to better understand the habitat. Fish production, there is going to be a fish production side to this, and I'm going to touch on that a little bit because I really want to contrast it with what we've tried as an agency over the years since grayling disappeared back in the early part of the 1900s. There's also a fisheries management piece to this. Where are these fish going to be, you know, put, and what is the public's ability to access grayling in the future going to look like? Rules and regulations and those type of things. And then kind of the outreach marketing stewardship component is really the fourth piece of this. So we're really now focusing on that research piece. What do we need to learn about the habitat, the streams, the temperature, the flow, the substrate, all those things that contribute to healthy fish populations, and we're trying to get a good understanding of that, and have. We've secured some monies from Consumers Energy Foundation. It was one of our big funders originally, and it kicked off some of the research on the upper Manistee in tributaries, one of the areas where grayling were found historically, so we kind of started there. And I should mention, too, that the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians had done some habitat work back in 2013-14 at the same area. So we had a good jump start on it. So over the last couple of years, we've been organizing. We've been getting partnerships and enthusiasm and all of that rolling. And now we're looking at kind of a fundraising strategy to help finance the research component of this before we really start what I want to say, putting fish in the water.
Absolutely. Todd Grischke is our guest here from the Michigan DNR. Now, Todd, the Arctic grayling was abundant in Michigan, but along comes inhabitants to the state, new inhabitants. Along came logging, and that really did a lot of damage to the habitat for these fish because they are kind of rather delicate fish with their habitat, and there has to be a good balance for them. And that pretty much killed a lot of them off, correct?
Yeah, really three things contributed, and we're going way back now, late 1800s, obviously a long time ago for many of us to even think about, but logging was prevalent in those times so much so that, they floated thousands of logs down these streams and scoured the riverbeds and took all the vegetation out of these streams and stream sides. So not just logging, but at the same time that was going on, the state was experimenting with bringing in non-natives, brown mm-hmm. trout, rainbow trout, and stocking brook trout. And so at the same time that their habitat was being decimated, their populations were being overfished and their habitat gone, we were also putting in new species of fish for them to compete with. So it was really several things that contributed to their demise. And since that time, we've tried stocking programs to bring them back, but that's simply what they were, stocking Arctic grayling, hoping that they could rejuvenate, and it was unsuccessful. So, I mentioned just a minute ago, I wanted to contrast that with what we're doing now. We are really starting at the ground level mm-hmm. and trying to learn everything we can about the species and their habitat before we get into a program to help rehabilitate them. And what we're bringing in is a technology that Montana has used successfully. And by the way, Montana and Michigan are the only two states in the lower continental U.S. that have had Arctic grayling as a native species. So they were successful in expanding their populations by using a technology. It's an in-stream incubation unit. Really glorified 5-gallon pails with tubes and hoses and some other things that allow eggs to incubate in the stream instead of in a hatchery. And so when the eggs hatch, they spill over into the stream and that they're imprinted right there. And it's been a successful program out west. So that's what we're looking to duplicate. And not necessarily everywhere. This is not something where we're going to be putting grayling in every single stream and every nook and cranny. We are really trying to focus on a couple of key areas in the state where they can be successful.
Todd Grischke is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Todd, we're going to talk a little bit more in the next segment of the show, if you don't mind hanging on for a minute.
You bet.
All right, we're going to learn more about the Arctic grayling and how it can be hopefully successfully, reintroduced here into the state. It's been a long process. Learning habitat's got a big deal to do with all of it, and with all the species here in the state. Habitat has a lot to do with it, and we'll talk more with Todd here in just a few minutes. Now, keep in mind, we've got a couple of things coming up. We have the Outdoor Rama coming up in March. We have the Ultimate Sports Show in Grand Rapids coming March. We will have tickets to give away for that, so make sure you follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wildmichigan, and you can win some tickets to those events. Also, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to join us on March 3rd at the Commemorative Bucks of Michigan banquet that's coming to Eagle Eye on that Saturday. So we want you to join us, be our guest, enjoy a great event as well. All of that on our Facebook page, and follow us on our website at wildmichiganradio.com, because we'll have a lot of stuff there as well. We have our podcast there, and it's all being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Lucky-buck.com. We want you to be successful with Lucky Buck, but we also want you to know the right places and times to use it. So make sure you go to their website, lucky-buck.com. Make sure you're doing so the legal way. That's how we do things around here in Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. We're coming right back with more Todd Grischke talking grayling on the Michigan Talk Network. We'll be right back.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up the podcasts there and find out what we're up to. And again, make sure you follow us on Facebook so you can find out how to win tickets to the upcoming Ultimate Sports Show in Grand Rapids and Outdoor Rama coming to the Suburban Collection Showplace in March as well. And that'll be the home of Big Buck Night and everything else with our friends Jimmy and Jenny. And also maybe win a pair of tickets to join us at the table for the commemorative Bucks of Michigan event going on March 3rd. Their big banquet going on at Eagle Eye, the banquet facility in East Lansing. So we'd love for you to join us there as well. Now, on the Lucky Buck Hotline, Todd Grischke with the Michigan DNR Fisheries Division. We're talking about Arctic grayling, and we are, you know, learning something about a fish that's been gone from Michigan for quite a while as a natural species. Now, Todd, I know there's some controlled areas that have grayling here in Michigan, places you can go fish them, but again, that's controlled, and we're talking about wild here, and you guys have done a lot of research going up into this point.
Yeah, you're right. There are some locations where you can go and access either fee fishing or that type of thing, but as far as a naturally reproducing fish in the state, we haven't had that since the early 1900s. They disappeared around 1920, 1930, right in that time frame. And what we're looking to do, hoping to do with this effort, is to find some locations in the state where they can be successful again and reproduce on their own. Like I mentioned earlier, we want to duplicate the success from Montana, bring in this, these in-stream incubators. And we're looking actually at going to Alaska to bring in eggs because that's a wild population of Arctic grayling out there, and with good genetics, and we know that if we kickstart this program with good genetics, the long-term success, the chances of it are much better. So we're hoping to do that actually this spring in May, hoping to go to Alaska, bring some eggs back, and we were able to secure some funding from a private foundation to do some research on competition and predation with our native brook and brown trout. So Michigan State University is going to be conducting some research this summer with eggs that I mentioned coming in from Alaska, doing kind of an in-lab situation with competition and predation, and that's a study that's funded for 3 years through the Wanger Foundation. So we're really excited about that. We're also pursuing some further grant monies for ultraviolet radiation, which we need on our state hatchery on our effluent. If we're bringing in eggs from out of state, there's potential for disease. We don't want our native fish populations to contract anything, so we're looking to get that ultraviolet radiation put on our effluent, and so we're pursuing that as well. And you know, it'd be an exciting thing, Duran, to have this fish back in the state. It's like I mentioned, it's native only to two states in the lower 48, and that's a pretty cool thing. The town of Grayling is named after this fish. Mm-hmm. You know, it's iconic. It has a lot of history in Michigan, and we're hoping to have some success with this program. But it's not going to be a quick fix. Some of us are not even going to be around here to see, you know, the fruits of our labor kind of thing. This could be 10 to 12 years out before we're where we want to be.
Well, I'm keeping my fingers crossed because it's a really beautiful fish. It's very unique looking. Todd, what is this fish directly related to as far as what we already see in the wild?
Well, it's a salmon species. It's really one of the only native salmonids that we had in Michigan. But you're right, it's unique. It doesn't look like anything else. If you've seen a grayling, they have a very large dorsal fin mm-hmm. that's very colorful. And when I say large, it's sweeping almost all the way down their back. It's a very cool fish and fun to catch, easy to catch. They are known to take flies and bait very readily. So if and when we get to that point where anglers can take advantage of them as a game fish, you know, they're going to be a fun addition to what we already have here in the state.
Yeah, I've heard that about grayling, that they are rather easy, so to speak, to catch.
Yeah, yeah, but colorful and unique and very popular out west and in the areas where they are found. They're very, very popular fish for anglers. So we hope to get there someday.
So now my question is, I mean, look, I don't think I'd ever want to catch and release. Yes, maybe, you know, catch a really nice one for a mount someday. But how are they for table fare?
You know, you mentioned earlier that logging was one of the things that decimated their populations. But at that time, there were truckloads, train car loads of grayling being shipped to major cities for food.
Wow.
You know, shipped to Chicago and down to Detroit and, you know, New York. So they were a popular table fare. Because they've been gone for a long time, it's hard to even talk with anybody who's had one, you know, streamside in a fry pan. But I imagine that they'd be pretty tasty.
Well, I tell you what, this is something, we applaud your hard work for this, to reintroduce this species, to do it the right way. To take all the steps and the people supplying the money, the grants that are going along with this, we applaud them as well, because this is something in my lifetime I would love to see. I've never seen a wild caught grayling. I've only seen, you know, mounts, and this is a fish that is really kind of honestly one of my favorite fish to even look at. Because of the aesthetics of it, and it's just gorgeous, and I hope to see that someday in our streams and lakes.
We agree, and I think that the 45 partners that we now have, agencies, universities, cities, you know, NGOs, on and on and on, I think that speaks volumes to what you just said. It is very appealing to people. It's iconic. Let's bring this fish back. There's a ton of support for doing this, and I think because of that, it's going to be a successful effort.
Absolutely. Well, Todd, I appreciate your time, and again, applaud all the work you guys are doing. I'll put a little note up on our website about this. Again, you can pick up the podcast if you missed any information about the grayling. By all means, pick it up on the podcast and visit the DNR, michigan.gov/DNR. You can find out more about the grayling and what's going on there. And man, as always, I appreciate your time.
You bet.
All right, Todd Grischke joining us here on the Lucky Buck Hotline in Wild Michigan, talking about the Arctic grayling. Would love to have that back here in Michigan. Would love to have the opportunity someday to fish that, if not here, you know, Montana. I didn't get my chance when I was in Alaska. Trust me, I would have liked to do that there, but never got really into the interior part, more Pacific Coast side for us on a cruise ship, but it was still Alaska. It was still fantastic. Make sure hit us up on the website, on the Facebook page. We are Wild Michigan. This is the Wild Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back.
I want to feel Michigan.
I talk for a living. I know what I'm doing. I'm Durant Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State. This is what happens when I try and multitask. We just got off the phone with Todd Grischke from the Michigan DNR on the Lucky Buck Hotline, and we were talking about the grayling here in Michigan, and we wanted to pass along a website for you to follow the initiative and follow the progress of the initiative, and that is migrayling.org. That's the Michigan Arctic Grayling Initiative. Maggie, I guess, is what they might or might not call it. MichiganGrayling.org, migrayling.org is where you can go to find it. We'll have a link on our website for you to follow the progress as well, because this is something that we're very, very interested here in the show. But right now, we're going to switch gears. Going to go to our good friend John Eberhardt, longtime friend, longtime contributor to this show. And, buddy, it's been a little while. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, just getting older.
You and I both, as we are now in our, going into our 13th year of this show. Can you believe that?
Wow.
I know, I never thought, you know, I always tell people, I didn't think we were going to last like 10 minutes, but we've lasted this long as we're going into the 13th year of the show. And a lot of things have changed in Michigan deer hunting, as you have, I mean, you have seen. From the days where we'd go out opening day, we'd sit by our favorite tree and wait for something to come by. You know, a lot of things changed for me personally with, you know, I started bow hunting about 13 years ago and really, really started learning more about the white-tailed deer. And that's something that you have pretty much, aside from your regular job, have made a life and a science out of.
Yes, and I actually remember when you first got into bow hunting. Yeah, I think I was on your show back then. And, yeah, I have kind of made a little bit of a lifestyle out of bow hunting. I have a real job, and a lot of people think all I do is hunt, but no, I don't. I'm a sales rep, and I've written several books and produced some instructional DVDs, and I'm very involved in the hunting industry. So, and I love it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you've got, I mean, you know what, the Whitetail Bootcamp Workshop, you've got, you've worked with so many great companies here in the state, and you were like the only guy, you and your son, the only guys I know that ever hunted out of a tree saddle.
Yeah, I've exclusively hunted out of a harness since 1981. I wouldn't even consider hunting out of a tree stand. If I think I'd quit hunting if I had to hunt out of an archaic tree stand, piece of metal that hangs in a tree, and I've been very successful. I've got 31 bucks in the record book in Michigan, and I've killed 19 Pope and Young bucks out of state on 22 trips, and I exclusively hunt public land and knock on doors for free permission properties. No bait, no food plots, never owned anything, never paid a dime down any place, so I've been relatively successful at it.
Well, let's real quickly, I want to get tips from somebody who does it often on how to approach someone, you know, to hunt their land, because it's either people are afraid to, they don't know how, or it just goes wrong the very first time they do it. I mean, there is a method to doing it. I mean, even coming down to what you wear.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I'm a huge activated carbon person as far as clothing goes, not necessarily, you know, the Scentlock is just the company that actually owns the patent on using activated carbon, so Scentlock is obviously what I use because that's what I have to, and basically, you know, I pay zero attention to the wind. I haven't paid attention to the wind in probably the last 17 years, and The first 35 years I hunted, I exclusively paid attention to the wind. So it's Scentlock definitely makes a difference, but you have to do it, you know, just like bow hunting. You have to set up your trees properly. You have to scout properly. You have to hunt during the right time of season. You have to have a correct entry and exit route. You have to hunt each location on a specific time of day. Some are morning spots, some are evening spots. And if you're detail-oriented and you take care of your carbon suits and your backpacks and everything else accordingly, you prep your locations correctly, hunting is not as difficult as people make it out to be. But you have to be detail-oriented and have to do things correctly. Most people are afraid, and they don't really know what to do. I talk to people all the time. And when I'm walking through the woods scouting somebody's property and I look at their locations, I'm like, how do you ever kill a deer from this spot, even a doe? I mean, they're too low. They're too exposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a rut phase location, and when the foliage is down, they stick out like sore thumbs. Their entry routes are wrong. Their exit routes are wrong. They use a headlamp going in with 150 lumen beam, and it spooks everything in the morning while they're walking into their location, or they spook everything coming out of their tree at night because they're lights shining all over. Every little detail, and especially in Michigan with 320,000 bow hunters, it's the heaviest pressured state in the country. Every detail matters. The kind of scents you use. If you use scents, I don't use scents. I hunt natural destination locations like apple trees, oak trees, primary scrape areas. I hunt places where the deer gravitate to and come to and linger. So, you know, I'm not hunting a little peripheral on the edge of a crop field where they're, you know, if you're on a 40-acre crop field and you're on the perimeter, that's got a mile of perimeter. So your odds of a deer coming out at the exact location you're at is pretty skinny. Whereas if you're at an exact destination location, mm-hmm. your odds are much, much higher.
Absolutely. John Eberhard's our guest here on Wild Michigan. And John, do we give deer too much credit sometimes, or are we not giving them enough?
It depends on what you want to kill. if you want to kill a mature buck in a heavily pressured state like Michigan, you can't really give them too much credit. If you just want to go out and shoot a doe or a year and a half or maybe even a 2.5-year-old buck, I don't think it's terrifically difficult, but... At 2.5 SAR, and it depends on the property. You know, if you're on public land in Zone 3, Southern Michigan, you know, that gets absolutely pounded. So a 2.5-year-old buck may be the biggest buck in the area. So it's going to be really smart if he lived through a full season of bow and gun season, and now he's a 2.5-year-old. He's going to be a tough animal to kill. So it totally depends. When I go out west, out of state, Kansas, Iowa, Illinois, you know, I go during Michigan's gun season because I don't gun hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those deer are stupid. There's a lot of mature bucks, and they're very, very simple to kill. That's why all the TV guys hunt there. But to kill a 2.5 or a 3.5 or a 4.5 in Michigan is extremely difficult. But still, I think a lot of hunters put too much thought into it because they hunt too much. I hunt much less time on stand now than I did back in the 70s and 80s, and my success rate is much, much higher. I just hunt a lot smarter. I know when to go where, what to do, the proper entry and exit. You know, a lot of people don't take entry and exits into account, and that's a major, major deal.
John Eberhard is our guest here. We're going to talk more with him in a few minutes because you've got seminars coming up. We want to find out where you're going to be because these are just a couple of things that he covers in the seminars, and we want to, you know, get in your brain a little bit more about that and find out how we can find your books and your DVDs because I know they're out there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. So if you don't mind hanging on, we will get back to you. And if your phone rings in the meantime, feel free to answer, John.
I turned it off.
Oh, you turned it off. There's, again, back to that whole thing we talked about off air about caller ID. God bless it. But we'll talk more with John here in a couple of minutes. He's on the Lucky Buck Hotline here, being brought to you by us, Wild Michigan. You can find us on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and you can also find us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/wildmichigan. We'd love for you to be a part of what we got going on. We have tickets to both Outdoor Rama coming up and, of course, the Ultimate Sports Show coming to Grand Rapids. We have tickets for those to give away, and we, have, of course, have tickets to join us at our table for the Commemorative Bucks of Michigan coming up. That big event happening on March 3rd. We would love to see you there. Keep it here. More coming your way with John Eberhard. You're listening to Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
I still believe.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan Spirit of the Wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, and via the Wild Michigan Talk Network. Very happy to have all of our affiliates on there. If you would like to have our show on your radio station, by all means, contact me at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. That is on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Or if you'd like to somehow sponsor the show, we would love to have you on, because that is what we do. We're all about Michigan. And as we said, going into our 13th year, we're not your grandfather's radio show either. We like to move along a little bit faster than most. And John Eberhardt is our guest right now on the show. And John, you got we talked about seminars coming up, and you're going to be at some places here in Michigan in the next month, and we would love to get the opportunity to go see you ourselves.
Well, thank you. Yes, the Novi Outdoorama, that opens, I think, March 1st, which is actually next Thursday. So I'll be doing seminars at that. I'm also going to be doing something else that's going to be interesting. Because I hunt out of a harness, I'm going to be promoting a particular harness. It has nothing to do with financial. I just want to help hunters kill something. I don't make anything on these things. So I have a booth at that show, and I'm going to have a tree in my booth, and somebody will be hanging from a harness during the entire show. So I'm doing seminars every day and selling books and DVDs at that. And the seminars will be on bow hunting in heavily pressured areas, which obviously Michigan is the most heavily pressured. So it should be interesting, and I'm going to get a lot of attention from the harness in the tree. So
yeah,
if anybody wants to learn how to or see somebody sitting in a tree in a harness, that's the place to go.
And that will be interesting too, because we've talked about this harness for a lot of years. And who is manufacturing that harness now?
The company that's making them now is called, their name of the company is New Tribe. And the only place you can buy it is on their website. And the actual harness is called a Kestrel, like a hawk, K-E-S-T-R-E-L. And they are a company that they still do. They make recreational tree climbing harnesses. That's a big deal out west. And when Trophy Line went out of business, they made the saddle. People started researching companies, and they got this harness company to start making them for hunting. Basically, all they had to do is get rid of the metal-to-metal contacts and make everything fabric-to-fabric so there was no noise.
Yeah, because I remember you'd used the saddle for a number of years, and last I remember also is, the company's not making them anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, I've hunted out of the same one since 1981. You don't wear them out, really, but I think I've replaced the lead strap once. But a lot of people were worried, you can't get them anymore. Boy, they used to be $200 retails, and when they went out of business, you'd had to pay $500 online to buy a used one.
Wow.
They were that. And right now, the company is six weeks out of production. In other words, if you ordered one right now, you wouldn't get it for 6 weeks. That's how backed up they are making. This is going to become much more popular in the future. I've done quite a few podcasts on harness hunting because some of these podcast places have been having people request, we want to know something about these harness hunting. Because a harness is something where you only have one, fits in your backpack. You hunt every tree for the rest of your life out of one harness. You don't have to have multiple stands or any of that stuff. And the advantages of a harness are just immense. Over a tree stand, you can shoot 360. It's fabric. Nobody's going to steal it. It's always with you. I could go on and on about that.
Yeah, we'll definitely do another show about that, but if this is something you want to find out about, make sure you see John at Outdoorama, and then find the company and order it now, because that way you have time, one, to get used to it, to get it, because they are 6 weeks out right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some other stuff I'm doing is last fall I filmed a bunch of topic videos, or 3 to 5 minute topic videos for deer and deer hunting. They got a hold of me. They're going to be on their website. They start airing in May, and they're probably going to have some on one of the, they own three TV shows. They said they're going to air some of them on there. But basically, it's about hunting, topic videos on hunting public and heavily pressured land. And I covered topics that they said nobody's ever touched before. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Topics that most people don't think about, like reflective markers for your entry routes, or the type of flashlights you use, the type of boots you use, just things that are important that nobody covers, because most people that do those topic videos on managed properties where not a lot of stuff matters, you can go kill deer anytime, pretty much. That's Anyway, those start airing in May on Deer and Deer Hunting website. Mm-hmm. And then probably the last thing is I'm doing these whitetail workshops, and they start in mid-April. And basically they're two-day events where the first day is in the field. We're in the woods all day visiting locations. I think we visit 14 different locations that I have prepped, showing entry routes, exit routes, why I'm this high in this tree, why this tree, why this location. This is a morning spot. This is an evening spot. This is a rut phase location. This is an early season location. Just trying to teach people how to actually hunt. There's lots of workshops you can go to learn how to manage your property and hinge cut and put food plots here and there. These are to teach you how to hunt where I don't care where you go hunting. You're going to be able to put yourself on the best bucks the property has to offer using the natural landscape of the property itself.
Absolutely. John Eberhardt is our guest here. And, you know, John, you've done DVDs, you've done books, and it's all about, it's what you've learned to help others. And that's something that is admirable in this business, because there's a lot of people out there that hunt and they're successful, but they don't, I don't know, it just kind of ends there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to me, this, as we started the show, as I've stated many times, that this show is not about what I know. That's a short, boring show. if this was going to be about what I knew at that time and what I still, 13 years later, know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this has always been about the guests and me asking the questions that everybody has and a lot of times are afraid to ask.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I think, Duran, that I bring to the table that I don't know anybody else that mm-hmm. does, not to pat myself on the back, but I guess I am, is... You know, of my 31 Michigan buck bucks, they've came off 19 different properties in 10 different counties. There's quite a few guys that have quite a few bucks in the book, but they're typically off one or two spectacular pieces of micromanaged property. You know, mine's all public and knock on doors. I don't care where I go. I feel like I can kill the best buck on the property without having to do any, you know, monetary alterations to the property, because I'm always hunting against other people on the same property.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring a different take to it. You know, if you own a great piece of property and nobody else hunts it but you and maybe one other guy, yeah, you're expected to kill big bucks, because you don't usually shoot bucks until they reach a certain age or antler criteria. So there's going to be multiple of those bucks on that property because they haven't been shot. And they're also going to be a lot easier to kill because they've grown to 3.5 or 4.5 years old, you know, like you see on TV, without any consequences with hunter interactions. So, you know, they move more during daylight hours. There's more mature bucks on the property, so it's a lot easier to rattle them in or use tactics because they compete more for breeding rights. A state like Michigan with such heavy pressure in the areas that I hunt, that's not the case. You just have to be more cautious about everything you do. And that's one thing. Once you learn how to hunt here and you're successful in a state like Michigan, I don't care where you go. You can kill bucks any place. Once you learn how to hunt in Michigan on heavily pressured areas and you're killing 2 and 3.5 year old bucks, you can go kill 4 and 5.5 year old bucks in Kansas, Iowa, Illinois, Ohio with relative ease if you go during the right time of season, and obviously the weather has to cooperate a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, and I hear the same thing from a lot of guys in the industry, a lot of people that are, you know, very heavy into this industry, that, you know, if you can hunt here successfully with mature bucks, you can hunt just about anywhere with you know, a far higher rate of success than you do here in the state. And that is encouraging, but, you know, we first have to learn these things, and that's why we bring you on, man. I appreciate you joining us as always.
Oh,
and,
my pleasure.
Website or anything you can share with us?
Yeah, www.deer, that's D-E-E-R hyphen, that's the little dash, deer-john.net, or www.eberhartswhitetailworkshops.com.
And we'll put a link up on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, for these as well. And you can pick up the podcast should you miss any of this. And thanks always to our great affiliates for having us on each and every weekend here on the Michigan Talk Network. Something that we feel is important is to be able to share what we learn from you, from our guests. And that's very important to us that we make a difference, that everybody gets a chance to learn the same things. John, we appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you at Outdoor Rama coming up. And again, if you want tickets to that, you'd like to win them, hit us up on the Facebook page or on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, Duran.
Absolutely. More coming your way. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks to Todd Grischke, migrayling.org. You want to find out more? You want to find out more about John? Go to the website, wildmichiganradio.com. Another hour coming your way on the Wild Michigan Talk Network.